Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to this program, which is being conducted in partnership with the Longevity Foundation. You'll be hearing much more about them. And the program is Living with Small Cell Lung Cancer, and this program is funded in part by Jazz Pharmaceuticals, Inc., and we thank them for their support of this program. Now, before I introduce our first speaker, I just want to let you know that there's 192 people on this call today who come from all over the United States in both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have a great number of people who are on the call globally from Canada, Germany, Iraq, Nigeria, the Philippines, Spain, South Africa, Switzerland, Uganda, Tanzania, and the United Kingdom. So this is truly a global call, and it's a credit to all of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us to learn more about small cell lung cancer. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Lissy Dawn Shields. And Dr. Shields is Assistant Professor of Clinical Medicine, IUSOM, Adjunct Assistant Professor of Medicine and Molecular Genetics, Associate Member, Experimental and Developmental Therapeutics, Department of Medicine, Division of Hematology Oncology, Thoracic Oncology, Indiana University, Melbourne and Bren Simon Comprehensive Cancer Center. And Dr. Shields will be addressing an overview of small cell lung cancer in the context of infectious diseases, the role of chemotherapy, diagnostic technologies, targeted therapies, and precision medicine. It is my great pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Shields.
Thank you, Dr. Messner, and welcome everyone. So good to hear that almost 200 listeners are tuning in, and I think you'll hear a wonderful conversation today from many amazing experts who are in support of you and your family and your loved ones as you go through this journey. And thank you for the opportunity to be here, you know, to be able to provide an overview of small cell lung cancer. You know, small cell lung cancer is a type of lung cancer that is notorious for being what we call a neuroendocrine cancer, meaning that this cancer utilizes certain biology and genes to have functions that are more like the primitive neuro pathways that control hormones and different growth and signaling that our organs may use, including, pancreas and brain and so on. And so these cancer cells have utilized this technology to be able to form cancer, and we have to use that knowledge to treat it appropriately. And so, a patient may be diagnosed with small cell. They may have a spot on an X-ray or on a CT scan. We do encourage patients to get lung cancer screening if they may be eligible, and talking to their doctor if they may be high risk for potentially for lung cancer with a history of tobacco use or other exposures. We always encourage patients to have their homes and families and loved ones tested for radon as the second leading cause of lung cancer. And so a patient may be diagnosed with small cell by a scan that showed a suspicious finding, potentially in the lung or outside of the lung, that led to a procedure like a bronchoscopy or a biopsy, and these diagnostic technologies that can help lead to the diagnosis of lung cancer, particularly small cell. The reason it's called small cell is that when it's looked at under the microscope, these are smaller cells, smaller than you would experience with other types of cancer, including lung cancer with non-small cell lung cancer. It historically used to be called Oat cell carcinoma. And there's been a number of wonderful researchers, including like Dr. Lovely, who's on the call, who have spent their life focused on understanding the biology, advocating for patient and care, and being able to understand the treatments and targeted therapies and precision genomics to overcome this cancer. The mainstay for small cell lung cancer is typically a combination of two types of chemotherapy, one called platinum. That could be, there's two cousin drugs, one called carboplatin and one called cisplatin. And they're platinum, they're like platinum cousins, and they are modified platinum compounds that go and bind the DNA of the cancer cell. Just like you'd stick a spoke, you know, a stick in a spoke of a bicycle, it stops those cells from dividing, and those cells, you know, hopefully and fortunately, those cancer cells die. The other type of therapy is something called etoposide, which is a type of chemotherapy that goes and blocks the ability of these cancer cells to divide. So the combination of these two therapies working together offers a ability to stop these cells from growing, spreading, or multiplying. And with that, you know, typically the treatment for small cell includes the combination of chemotherapy, and if it's limited stage, limited to one side of the chest with radiation, and if it's considered extensive stage or extending outside of the chest into other parts of the body, like the brain, the bones, the adrenal glands, which sit on top of our kidneys, the liver, then we add immunotherapy. And I know that Dr. Lovely will talk about this more, but there's so many exciting clinical trials for small cell lung cancer that are ongoing, over 200. And really, we're seeing a revolution of progress in the last 5 years with the introduction of other chemotherapies like lurbinectedin, which binds the minor groove, the small part of the DNA to block these cells from dividing, as well as those that can recruit the immune system with those agents called bispecific T-cell engagers, or BiTEs, you'll hear about with tarlatamab. There's targeted therapies targeting certain proteins inside of the small cell that are under investigation for trials, as well as clinical trials looking at Trojan horses that are called antibody-drug conjugates, meaning an antibody or you know, something that presents on the outside of a cell that now is able to usher in unassumingly a payload of chemotherapy to these targeted proteins on the outside of the small cell, so delivering targeted therapies in a way of a high dose of chemotherapy to the small cell. And these are promising, and Dr. Lovely, I'm sure, will talk more about this. And so, you know, in summary, it's an exciting time for small cell lung cancer. Having support, having a community, such as, you know, here with this Cancer Care Connect workshop with Longevity, also with our Small Cell Smashers, if you're not a part of it, we'd love to have you. But we want you to have support, to be proactive, and to be encouraged. There is improvement in small cell that it's here to stay and more to come. Related to small cell, and I know with other pieces of this workshop of infectious diseases, you know, anytime a patient is on active chemotherapy, we always ask for you to be proactive and avoiding patients, any exposures that could put you at risk for illnesses, washing your hands and being up to date on your vaccines, getting good rest, and keeping your stress level as low as possible, because we know patients who have lower stress levels do better and they're better supported, as seen by the stress lung study. And so with that, I'll turn it back over to Dr. Messner and the team. And I hope you have a wonderful rest of the workshop and happy to answer any questions.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Shields. That was just a superb, a stellar presentation. And because you are the first speaker, you really set the tone for today's program. So I really appreciate that as well. And you've given people a lot of information, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. So thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Christine Lovely, and Dr. Lovely is Associate Professor of Medicine, Division of Hematology, Oncology, Vanderbilt University Medical Center, and Vanderbilt Ingram Cancer Center. Dr. Lovely will be addressing updates on clinical trials, how they contribute to treatment options, combination systemic treatment for metastatic small cell lung cancer, preventing and managing treatment side effects. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Lovely.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, for the kind introduction. And hello, everyone joining from around the world. It is such a pleasure to be here today in this cancer care workshop. I will start by saying I absolutely love the cancer care 80 years of help and hope, and I hope that today is both helpful and instills everyone who's listening to this dialogue with hope, because never before in the realm of small cell lung cancer has there been a time of such hope on the horizon for this type of lung cancer, which for many years, honestly, has eluded us. But there's the convergence of amazing science, amazing clinical trials, and an amazing community of patients, of investigators, of providers at all levels really trying to rally around and support the community of patients living with small cell lung cancer. I am going to talk initially about clinical trials, and I'm going to start by setting a framework, because maybe not everyone who's listening in knows what a clinical trial is. And I'll start by saying clinical trials, no matter where in the world you are, clinical trials are the framework that we use to bring new medicines to patients. And for small cell, we absolutely need new therapies to continue to make treatments better and better, to continue to push outcomes for patients with small cell lung cancer. We want new therapies. We want better therapies. We want patients to live longer and have better quality of life. And the way we do that is by clinical trials. And clinical trials, sometimes there's this perception that clinical trials is all experimental or you're being a guinea pig. I would say clinical trials is really about exploring either new combinations of existing medicines, so using medicines that we already have in different ways, or using new drugs, novel drugs, that we are bringing into the clinic for patients. And there's multiple different types of drugs, and I'm going to talk about classes of drugs that are in clinical trials. But first, let me talk about types of clinical trials, because there is no one-size-fits-all approach to clinical trials. There's multiple different types of clinical trials, and I think if you're listening in and you're thinking about clinical trials, it's helpful to have a framework, a foundation for what is a clinical trial, how do I find a clinical trial, and then I will dig into, well, what about trials specific for small cell lung cancer, and what am I hopeful for as emerging new treatments for small cell lung cancer? So let's talk about types of clinical trials for cancer in general and small cell more specifically. Well, clinical trials are classified into three different phases, and really the phases of clinical trials are to evaluate the safety and how effective a new treatment is. And that new treatment, again, may be a brand new drug that's never been used in patients before, or a drug that we already have, but used in a different way. And so trials can be phase one, two, or three. A phase one trial is the earliest trial. This is usually what we call a first-in-human clinical trial, where a brand new drug is being tested. This is the entryway for a drug to come into patients. And a phase one trial is built on an enormous amount of data or evidence already that has been garnered in using research. So that's when we talk about clinical research and basic science research and translational research. Those are all mechanisms we use to try to study small cell, in this case, in a laboratory setting to say, let's understand scientific principles and scientific rationale before we bring it to patients. You know, we don't just make new drugs out of nowhere. We want to have really evidence and data and good, sound judgment before it comes to patients. But a phase one trial is a first-in-human clinical trial. It's the first time a drug is being tested in patients, but it is that phase one trial is based on an enormous amount of data, of evidence from research. The next level of trial is called a phase two trial. That is, hey, a drug looks promising in a phase one trial. It's safe. It looks like there's some signal of that it works, and now we want to examine the drug in a larger group of patients. And so we start with a phase one, we move on to a phase two, and if it continues, the drug continues to look good in a phase two trial in a larger group of patients, maybe with a different endpoint, then we say, okay, now we want to go to a phase three trial. And a phase three trial is often open at multiple sites, often around the world, because we want to be able to be as broad as possible and bring new treatments to as many patients as possible. A phase three trial compares a new treatment against what we believe is the standard treatment, the best we have available at that time. And so any drug that ultimately comes into our standard clinical practice has to go through very rigorous phases of these clinical trials, one, two, and three, before it actually comes into our normal toolbox for the care of patients. And so if you're receiving a drug outside a clinical trial, that drug absolutely was tested in the clinical trial before any of us had the ability to administer it in the clinic. And those trials, phase one, two, and three, if you're interested in a clinical trial, you may be offered multiple options for multiple different phases of clinical trials. Now let's talk about the types of drugs that may be in clinical trials and the types of drugs that may be in clinical trials for patients with small cell lung cancer. And so I'm going to, again, zoom out a little bit, because I think before we get into very, very specific agents, let's set a framework for how we understand. You know, we have a framework now for the clinical trials, phases one, two, and three. Let's have a framework for what types of drugs may be tested in clinical trials for patients with small cell lung cancer. Well, there is our standard backbone, chemotherapy, and that will continue to be, in my expert opinion, a backbone for small cell lung cancer for many years to come. We may administer chemotherapy in different ways. We may deliver it in different ways, but chemotherapy will always be one of the tools we have in our toolbox. Another type of drug that we may use is immunotherapy. And immunotherapy, there are many different types of immunotherapy. For the purposes of this discussion, I'm going to specifically talk about a class of drugs called immune checkpoint inhibitors. These are drugs that release the brakes that the cancer has put on the immune system. And so you may ask, and this is a great question, well, cancer is not supposed to be in my body. It's foreign to my body. So why doesn't the immune system get rid of it? The same way your immune system would get rid of a virus like a chickenpox or the flu if you had the flu. And the reason is because cancer has signals to turn down the immune system. And these immunotherapy drugs or immune checkpoint inhibitors release those brakes that the cancer puts on the immune system. The third class of drugs is a group of drugs we call targeted therapies. And there's many of them, but the principle behind this category of drugs is we understand from rigorous research, and both Dr. Shields and I are, in addition to being doctors who treat patients, we are also run research laboratories where we study small cell. In those research laboratories, we're constantly asking, how do we understand the mechanics of small cell? So how does a small cell tumor actually become a small cell tumor? And can we exploit those properties to develop drugs to stop the tumor from growing? So targeted therapies are based on the mechanics of the tumor. The next class, the fourth class of drugs, is something we call cellular therapies, and in specific, CAR T therapies. And this is actually a really interesting novel approach where you actually take the patient's own immune cells, your own T cells, and engineer them to destroy the cancer cells. That is a class of drugs, not just for small cell, but for other cancers as well. And so those are four bins, and I would say one other, which is a form of fancy chemotherapy, which is antibody drug conjugates. It's both chemotherapy and targeted therapies, but they are antibodies that actually attack the cancer in a specific way. So multiple different types of drugs. Now, before I get into, again, the specific drugs, let's talk about one last thing. We talked about what kind of clinical trials, what types of drugs are for clinical trials, where do you find a clinical trial? And that's going to really depend on where in the world you're living. I think the most important thing is ask your doctor, ask your care team, am I eligible for a clinical trial? Do you have any clinical trials for small cell lung cancer? In the United States where I practice, there is actually a website from the National Cancer Institute clinicaltrials.gov, where you can actually go and look up existing clinical trials and search them, not just by cancer type, but also by location. So depending on the geographic location that you live in, but I would counsel everyone to ask your doctor, ask your care team, am I eligible for a clinical trial, and where can I access clinical trials? So now let's dive into some more specifics of clinical trials for small cell lung cancer. And I would say the one that we could talk for hours and hours about this, because in my assessment of this field, and both Dr. Shields and I, as physicians who think a lot about small cell lung cancer, there is just a growing number of trials, and too many that we could speak about in 7 minutes, but I will highlight some of the ones I'm most excited about. There's an ongoing clinical trial for patients with advanced or metastatic, or what we call extensive stage small cell lung cancer, where all patients get chemotherapy plus immune checkpoint inhibitor therapy, a drug called atezolizumab, and then use this drug called tarlatamab, which is a BiTE, a bispecific T-cell engineer. It's one of these special T-cell therapies, in what we call the maintenance setting. And so the idea here is most patients get a good response from chemotherapy, but how do we make that response last longer? And this tarlatamab drug, it specifically attaches to a protein on the small cell tumor called DLL3. And DLL3 is what we call, the fancy name is, a lineage-specific marker. And let's delve into that more deeply, because I would say one important take-home message here is that science has led us to these specific markers or lineage markers for small cell that I think are amongst the most exciting drugs in development for small cell right now. The markers, DLL3 being one of them, can be targeted in multiple ways. So there's tarlatamab, which is a BiTE therapy, bispecific T-cell engineering therapy, which engages both the marker on the small cell and your immune system. And there are other DLL3 BiTEs like obrixtamig, which is from a different company, and even more coming down the pipeline. But there are also clinical trials of DLL3 antibody drug conjugates. So the target on the tumor cell is DLL3, again, a target very specific to small cell lung cancer, and that target brings along a chemotherapy, so it's kind of like targeted delivery of chemotherapy. And then there are even DLL3 bound to radioisotopes, so literally radioactivity, and radioactivity can kill the tumor very effectively. And so the target, DLL3, based on rigorous science to understand how the mechanics of small cell works, and then multiple ways we can target DLL3 in the clinic. That's not the only lineage-specific marker. SEZ6 is another one. It's SEZ6. We just saw data for this drug last week at a big international lung cancer conference, and there is a SEZ6 antibody drug conjugate where SEZ6 is another marker very specific to small cell lung cancer, and is we're using that marker on small cell to tag the small cells and then deliver, in this case, a chemotherapy to the small cell tumor. So the idea is let's deliver therapies in as specific a way as possible. The other one I will mention, which is not a lineage-specific marker to small cell, but it has shown really promising data because small cell tumors express this marker. So it's a marker that's just on the small cell tumor. It's kind of like you have a button on your shirt. This is a marker on top of the tumor. It's something called B7H3. And this is another marker, a way we can tag the small cell tumors and preserve some of the normal cells around it. And this B7H3 is another antibody drug conjugate that is coming into clinical trials and has shown very promising effectiveness in patients with small cell lung cancer. These drugs right now are largely being tested in the realm of patients with extensive stage or metastatic small cell lung cancer, but will also move into the realm of earlier stage disease as well. Other areas of clinical trials, and I'm running short on time, so I'm going to just close with, there's also an immense interest in screening and early detection for small cell lung cancer, trying to find it sooner and treat it faster. So there are trials that we're participating in for patients with early stage small cell lung cancer where patients get chemotherapy and radiation followed by immunotherapy, and how do we give additional drugs there, such as tarlatamab, such as the SEZ6 antibody drug conjugate, to actually prolong responses and improve outcomes for patients with small cell lung cancer. It's a tremendous message of hope that we have all these new drugs coming into our clinical pipeline. Please talk to your provider team about what availability of clinical trials that you have. The way that we get new treatments for patients with small cell lung cancer is by bringing patients to clinical trials. That's how we get new drugs. Different side effects of different drugs, your provider team on a clinical trial, you'll be very closely monitored. That's also a big part of being on a clinical trial. And it helps us all learn how to advance this field and help patients the most. And maybe for sake of time, I will end there, but I would love to take questions during the question and answer session. Thank you all so much for participating today. From whatever part of the world you're in, it is a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Lovely. That was just a sterling presentation, stellar in every way, and so much information, and particularly focusing on clinical trials is so important in terms of people understanding all the research that's going into finding new and better treatments for small cell lung cancer. So I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Dr. Kenneth Rosenzweig, and Dr. Rosenzweig is professor and chair, Department of Radiation Oncology, ICANN School of Medicine at Mount Sinai, system chair, Mount Sinai Health System. And Dr. Rosenzweig will be addressing the important role of radiation oncologists, the role of radiation treatments to treat lung cancer and cancer pain, when to call your healthcare team about cancer treatment side effects, symptoms, discomfort, and pain. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Rosenzweig.
Thank you very much, Dr. Messner. It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you to Dr. Shields and Dr. Lovely for doing a wonderful overview of small cell lung cancer. So like Dr. Messner mentioned, I'm a radiation oncologist, and radiation has a very important role to play in the treatment of lung cancer. So it is frequently used in early stage lung cancer. So that would be lung cancer that hasn't spread to the lymph nodes or other parts of the body. That's not as common of a situation in small cell lung cancer. It happens more frequently in non-small cell lung cancer, which is all the other types of lung cancer. And those situations, when it is applicable, we do a very focused treatment called stereotactic body radiation therapy, where, again, the radiation beam is really just treating the tumor itself, which is just in the middle of the lung, and can get a very high dose into the tumor with very low dose to other parts of the body. So it's a very effective treatment. For small cell lung cancer, it's more common for the tumor to be in the center of the chest and to involve the lymph nodes. So the very focused treatment like stereotactic treatment can be very damaging to the structures in the center of the chest, such as the food pipe, the esophagus, the heart, the breathing tubes. So we usually want to break the radiation up into multiple treatments, usually one treatment a day, Monday through Friday, for about 6 weeks, and what we call conventional radiation. This is also more commonly done in small cell lung cancer because we almost always give the radiation at the same time the chemotherapy is being given. Not exactly the same moment, but usually a patient will come in the morning, get the radiation treatment, and then go to the medical oncology clinic to get their chemotherapy on the days that they're getting chemotherapy. And the people still come in on days when they're not getting chemo to just get radiation by itself, which, you know, turns out to be most of the time. Chemotherapy and the very high dose radiation, the stereotactic treatment, does it's a little bit too dangerous to do both of those at the same time. So again, the more common scenario is a lower dose of radiation each day at the same time as the chemotherapy. And that's a very effective treatment for small cell lung cancer. There have been a number of trials which have shown that this is very helpful to keep the disease under control and cure more people. So it's something that we do very frequently in this disease, pretty much all the time in this disease if people can tolerate it. The other role for radiation is treating lung cancer when it has spread outside of the lung or to another spot in the body. And this can be done for multiple scenarios. One is if, you know, the tumor is under control in the lung and just one more spot shows up, for example, in the brain or in the gland around the kidney. Sometimes we can do very focused treatment, like the stereotactic treatment I was talking about, and just get that tumor under control and hopefully, you know, prolong people doing well without the cancer spreading. So that's doing, you know, small areas of treatment throughout the body. On some occasions, if the tumor spreads and the tumor itself is causing symptoms, so if the tumor's in a bone and it's causing pain in the bone, or if it's pressing up against a breathing tube and causing difficulty breathing, then we'd give radiation to palliate those symptoms, to alleviate those symptoms. And that's something we also commonly do in small cell lung cancer. So the radiation oncologist has a role in all stages of treatment for lung cancer and small cell lung cancer. And it's important that we integrate and collaborate with our colleagues in surgery and in medical oncology and thoracic oncology to make sure that we're always in sync in helping take care of people who come to our clinics. And part of that is also to team with the patient so that we know when you're having difficulties with any treatment. So I think a general rule of thumb is, you know, when to call your healthcare team is when you're having difficulty that you don't know how to handle. So, you know, many times, you know, if you're, you know, having a headache or just, you know, stub your toe, you know, you probably don't need to call and you can take care of, you know, take an over-the-counter medicine if the doctor thinks it's acceptable, and that's not going to be a problem. But if you're really having difficulties such as intense pain, difficulty breathing, confusion, you know, difficulty walking, we definitely want to know about it. And if there's any difficulty getting in touch with your treating clinic, that might even just be prudent to come straight to the emergency department to get evaluated. If a tumor is in a bad spot, it could be causing some major difficulties, and finding out about it early is definitely going to be helpful. Also, just some of the treatments that we do can cause side effects themselves, you know, making people prone to infection or the salts in the body might get out of balance. So we'd want to know about that as well to help take care of it before it becomes more of a problem. One advantage of when you're getting radiation is that you're actually in the clinic every day. So if a problem doesn't feel emergent, you'll be in clinic the next day, and obviously the treating physician or in the covering physicians will come down and make sure to see what's going on and try to help you out with that. So don't hesitate to call if there are questions. Just the nature of how clinics are set up, there's always someone with some expertise covering, even if it's not your specific doctor. So we definitely want to know if you're having any problems that just seem to be a little bit too much to handle at that moment. Thank you once again, and I'll be on for the question and answer in case there are any specific questions people have for me. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dr. Rosenzweig. That was just a wonderful presentation and really a very important one on the role of the radiation oncologist and what you actually can do, all the things that that radiation oncology can do for patients. So I'm sure there'll be questions to you during the Q&A as well. So thank you so much. Just a stellar presentation. And our next speaker is Dr. Christina Gowan. And Dr. Gowan is Associate Clinical Professor, Director of Education, Chern Family Center for Integrative Oncology, Department of Supportive Care, Medicine, and Hematology, HCT, City of Hope Comprehensive Cancer Center. Dr. Gowan will be addressing the role of activity and movement and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, quality of life, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Gowan.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, for the opportunity to speak on this wonderful program and for all that you do for our patients around the country and the world. Again, my name is Dr. Christina Gowan, and I specialize in integrative oncology, and it's an honor to be with you all today. And today I'll be speaking about two important areas of lung cancer care, and that's really the role of activity and movement and how to prepare for your telehealth or telemedicine appointments. So both of these topics are truly practical and directly impact your quality of life and the overall cancer care experience. So again, thanks again for joining us. So let's begin with the role of activity and movement. Well, research consistently shows that movement plays a critical role in lung cancer care. Activity supports lung function, and it reduces cancer-related fatigue, it improves mood, and strengthens overall resilience during treatment. So it's important to understand that movement does not need to truly be strenuous to be effective, that gentle and consistent activity is key. So some examples could include simply walking, even in short intervals, some light resistance training with bands or small weights, stretching to maintain your flexibility, and then personal favorite, mind-body exercises such as yoga, tai chi, or qigong, which really combines movement with breath control and the element of mindfulness, which has been associated with improved outcomes, lower rates of anxiety, depression, so lots of benefits with that kind of meditative movement. Some practical tips for patients, including many different strategies, but could include just starting with something as simple as 5 to 10 minutes of activity per day, really focusing on exercises that promote deep and steady breathing and adjusting the level of intensity according to your energy levels. You should really listen to your body, be intuitive, let your body be your guide, and recognize that daily capacity will vary, that some days will be good and some days will not be as energetic or full of vitality, and that is okay. The goal is really steady engagement in movement as a part of your daily life rather than perfection. I encourage you to always communicate with your healthcare team, get a buddy, really make this a community activity in a very safe way. We're going to move now to preparing for telehealth and telemedicine appointments, and telehealth has become an integral part of cancer care, and it really provides greater access to specialists, helps to reduce the burden of travel, but you really have to be intentional to make the most out of these appointments. So preparation is essential. Number one, technology. Try to test your internet connection, your camera, your microphone in advance. Select a quiet space with good lighting to allow for clear communication, and come with a prepared list of questions. Writing even 3 to 5 key questions prior to the visit will help ensure that you get the most out of your visit and all of your concerns are addressed. Quality of life. It's really important not only to be thinking about the numbers and the different kind of clinical aspects of the care, but how are you feeling? Bring your quality of life concerns to your provider at these visits. And so how are you sleeping? How are your energy levels? That you're really encouraged to share your lived experience, including those aspects I had mentioned, such as fatigue, sleep quality, appetite, emotional well-being, ability to perform your daily activities. These are really critical to communicate to your healthcare team for comprehensive cancer care. I do want to make a note about open notes. And so many healthcare systems now provide patients with access to your clinician's visit notes through secure portals. So reviewing these notes before and after appointments really help to reinforce your understanding and help support communication with your family and allows you to identify areas that perhaps need some clarification at future visits. So in closing, incorporating daily activity and movement enhances your strength, your breath, your quality of life, and thoughtful preparation for telehealth appointments through technology readiness, prepared questions, attention to your quality of life, and review of your open notes really can empower you to be active as a partner in your own care. So taken together, these strategies really strengthen the cancer care journey and support both treatment and whole person well-being. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Gao. That was just a wonderful presentation. I think that you highlighted such important areas, particularly the role of activity and movement. So thank you so much. Just a wonderful, stellar presentation. And our next speaker is Ms. Diana Bearden, and Ms. Bearden is an oncology dietitian with the Michael Lee DeBakey VA Medical Center, and she'll be addressing the role of the oncology dietitian and nutrition and hydration concerns and tips. My pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Bearden.
Thank you, Carolyn. I'm excited to be part of today's presentation. Nutrition and hydration are essential. They're essential in your tolerance to treatment and providing you the energy to do the things that you enjoy. Your diet might be modified either during or after your cancer treatment to assist with managing some of the side effects and helping you get in the nutrition that you need. Some potential side effects that you might experience could include things like dry mouth, difficulty swallowing, a change in taste, maybe a decrease in appetite, or even fatigue. During your course of treatment, your nutrition needs may increase. This is something that can happen with patients when they're going through treatment. It's a very individualized possibility, but meeting with your dietitian will help you ensure that you have the tools to know the foods that you should be eating and making sure that you're meeting your nutrition goals. If you aren't meeting your nutrition goals, it can impact your overall health and even your course in treatment. So a dietitian is essential. Please know how to reach out to them. They're part of your healthcare team. They can provide you information on things like your calorie, protein, and your fluid needs and any diet modifications that might be suggested. Oftentimes, with lung cancer, patients get very fatigued while eating and can fill up very quickly, resulting in eating less than normal. So they can provide you the tips to help overcome some of these challenges. Even if you're overweight, you can still become malnourished. And so understanding that weight loss during this time is not encouraged, but we can definitely make sure that you do well with your treatment by meeting your nutrition goals. Now, through the treatment, you may have side effects, and there are medications that the doctor might prescribe for you. So please talk with your healthcare team to make sure you feel comfortable on how to take those medications. They're really important in your experience in your journey through this time. Hydration is something that's oftentimes overlooked, and dehydration is very common in patients when they're not eating as much, because usually if they're not eating as much, they're not drinking as much. And dehydration can amplify symptoms such as nausea, fatigue, and even feeling dizzy. Fluids are anything that's liquid at room temperature, so things like water, milk, sports drinks. Some general guidelines are most people need between 8 and 10 8-ounce glasses of fluid a day, but some treatments might increase your fluid needs. So, again, talking with your healthcare team to know your unique needs is very important. In closing, there are several members of the team, and just know how to reach out to us and get to us sooner rather than later so we can help you as soon as possible. I'm going to hand the line back over to Carolyn. Thanks so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Jordan. That was just a wonderful presentation. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Ann Fish Stegall, and she is Senior Vice President, Patient Services and Healthcare Delivery, Longevity Foundation. And she'll be talking to you briefly about Longevity Foundation's free programs and services, and she'll also be talking about giving you information about their website and how to contact them by phone. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Ms. Ann Fish-Stegall.
Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, and thank you so much for including me and Longevity in this wonderful workshop today. For those of you who don't know, Longevity is a global lung cancer advocacy foundation. We are focused on impacting anyone affected by the diagnosis of lung cancer through fostering awareness, early detection, ensuring access to quality care, and empowering patients and their caregivers to be their own advocates while being big supporters of research. We also work very diligently to overcome the stigma of lung cancer and persuade public policy makers to increase funds and change policy that will impact the lives of lung cancer patients positively. We offer support groups in the form of virtual meetups. These are held monthly and are divided out by diagnosis, such as individual biomarkers. There is a group for small cell and also a group for caregivers. We do have a helpline, and we have the ability to match patients who are looking for clinical trials and to give one-on-one peer mentorship for those who are newly diagnosed. We have one-on-one navigation with an oncology nurse navigator as well as an oncology social worker. And for small cell specifically, you heard Dr. Shields mention in the beginning about our small cell smashers. The smashers is a group led by Dr. Shields and supported by the Longevity Foundation. It is a Facebook community, as well as Dr. Shields and I have the privilege of hosting a monthly Facebook Live event with wonderful guest speakers, and that gives our smashers a lot of opportunity for education and to ask questions about the disease. We also have educational materials and videos on our website. Soon we will actually be including a bite therapy video. You heard Dr. Shields and Dr. Lovely speak about bite therapy, and we will have a video on our website very, very soon that explains that in terms that are easy for patients to understand. If you would like to be in touch with us, we would absolutely love to hear from you. You can reach us through our website at longevity.org, or you can reach us through our helpline, and that number, I'm not sure because I can't actually see the screen. I don't know if that number is on the screen or not, but let me just give you...
What the number is.
Is it on the screen?
833-797-5800.
That's it. Thank you. I was going to pull it up from my own email here, but thank you very much, Dr. Messner. That's the number. And that will get you in touch with a person who will help you be connected to whatever resources you need, whether it's educational materials, financial assistance, or one-on-one navigation. Again, thank you so much for including me and Longevity in this workshop today. We look forward to hearing from you. We have several upcoming events in the way of virtual lunch and learns, our Breathe Deep Together campaign during Lung Cancer Awareness Month in November. And of course, we would love to have you join our Smashers Facebook community. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much on this wonderful resource for everybody, and please, everyone, take advantage of this. And I'm just going to say a few words about cancer care services. I'm going to go right on. And, Cancer Care Office is a national organization that offers free programs and services nationally. You can reach us on our helpline at 800-813-4673 or our website, www.cancercare.org. And we also have a oncology, our staff answer a helpline 5 days a week, business hours, Eastern time, and also many people call us for many different reasons. We do offer online support groups, and we have an online support group on small cell lung cancer. We do offer financial and co-payment assistance and patient navigation services and a host of other services. If you go to our website, you'll be able to see everything that we offer. So now we're going to move right on to Q&A. We have quite a few questions, so let me start with a question for Dr. Shields. At what point does the prophylactic radiation to the brain start, or when is that treatment typically offered in the treatment plan? Dr. Shields?
So thank you for this listener for the question. You know, this is such an important topic, especially for, you know, and appropriate for patients who are facing small cell lung cancer. So, you know, I will say that, you know, the original research and trials, like Dr. Lovely spoke about, that led to this becoming a standard of care, they were held back in the late 1990s and 2000s. So, you know, 1999 and early 2000s. And so Dr. Slatman and the investigators looked at the role of prophylactic cranial radiation for patients who had small cell lung cancer with good control of their disease and response after curative intent or intent to cure patients with limited stage. And what they found is that patients had benefit if they received prophylactic or preventative brain radiation or PCI, prophylactic cranial radiation. And so that became the standard of care for patients, and actually for patients who had extensive stage who also had great control after chemo and chemotherapy with good response and no progression. Now, fast forward about 15, 20 years, there was a question that was called for the validity or the strength of this data. Whenever the Japanese group performed, Dr. Takahashi and his colleagues performed a large phase 3 study that showed there was no benefit of looking at prophylactic radiation to the brain for patients with extensive stage, that patients had as much benefit with getting an MRI every 3 months for monitoring. And so now that when we look at these studies, it sheds light as to some of the holes that were there in the original design, meaning that some patients didn't get scans at all, and all patients that got scans on this original study were CT scans and not MRIs, which have higher resolution, like 4K TVs compared to TVs we had 20, 30 years ago. And so there's a cooperative group study that is looking at this, you know, called the MAVERICK study, that is looking at the role of comparing these two regimens, as Dr. Lovely said, comparing it head-to-head and saying, is a brain MRI just as good as prophylactic radiation? And so that is underway, should read out hopefully in 2027 to really answer this. And so, you know, it is a patient and physician shared informed decision making. That every patient should hear the options, the risks, the benefits. PCI does come with acute or early and late toxicities, such as fatigue, that can be tremendous, as well as memory loss, memory impairment, or other neurologic side effects. And so it really does cause us to pause and say, is this worth it? Is this a benefit? Or are we potentially skewing the data by other confounding variables of patients who are going to do well anyways? And so we have to look at this in a standardized fashion with research and clinical trials. And so it is a patient and provider decision. You should have all the information of why and why not before you make that decision. And so currently in my current practice, that is not something I pursue, but other oncologists do. And so, you know, I think that being mindful of supporting patients' quality of life and preserving memory and function that is of utmost importance. And so I do an MRI every 3 months for all of my patients who are in my clinic with small cell lung cancer of the brain.
Thank you so much.
Dr. Messner, can I comment as well?
Well, yes, please, Dr. Messner, I guess.
Yeah, and thank you very much, Dr. Shields, for summing up the data there, which I agree with completely. I think it's been a number of years since I've given prophylactic cranial radiation, and you know, part of the reason it was used so frequently 20, 30 years ago was less chemotherapy options back then, and as we've learned today, the options are so much more vast than they've ever been in the history of treating this disease. So we often don't need, you know, there's often a good reason not to do a treatment like that. Some of the technology has improved if it is needed, and which can reduce some of the side effects, you know, with some medications that we use with it, or avoiding some areas where there can be more difficulty with the side effects. But I think the bigger thing is we now have a better technology similar to what I was talking about, a stereotactic treatment. So if someone is found to have a tumor in the brain and found very early, we can do a very focal treatment, which has much fewer side effects, and it's a treatment we can repeat a number of times to get any brain disease under control. So I think that's kind of become the standard of care, not to do prophylactic cranial radiation, do close monitoring of the brain, and if anything shows up, find it early and kind of take care of it when it's still very small and still very easy to treat. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And I'll just echo that back. And so, you know, the agents we have, like Dr. Lovely described with tarlatamab and some of these other agents, we are able to see that they have activity in the brain. And so if they're not causing symptoms, they're what we call subcentimeter, and there's no swelling, and patients are asymptomatic, your oncologist may even talk to you about pursuing a different line of treatment if it has known brain activity, and closely watching. We always want you to be in the right place with all the right support, and so making sure you are plugged into a radiation oncologist in that setting with a good backup plan in place is important. And so, you know, I think that the field is dynamic and fluid, and thankfully for our patients and their families, we are continuing to improve and improve on these technologies and treatments.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask each of our speakers to provide a takeaway. So I'll start with Dr. Shields, Dr. Lovely, Dr. Rosenzweig, and Ms. Ann Fischtego. So, would you like to provide a takeaway, Dr. Shields?
Absolutely. So, you know, thank you to the Cancer Care Connect Workshop and Longevity Foundation for the opportunity to speak today to 200 participants. Small cell is, you know, yes, it has historically been an aggressive disease, but treatment breakthroughs are here to stay. The victory is here to stay. There are more and more options, and we highly, highly encourage clinical trial enrollment, involvement, you know, get a second opinion. Make sure you feel comfortable with your treatment plan and what's your plan B and what's your plan C. And so make sure you're supported. You're working with your physical therapist, occupational therapist, site of care, and nutritionist. But the key takeaway today is that there are so many breakthroughs. They are here to stay. And always, always seek for more support, more knowledge, more treatments, and know that there's a community rooting you on.
Excellent. And Dr. Lovely, would you like to provide a takeaway?
Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Messner, for this forum to talk about a disease, a type of cancer, small cell lung cancer, that we're all so very passionate about, to support this community and all the patients who are part of this community. And my message is one of hope, and I will continue to spread that message of hope and say that never before has there been a time where there has been what I see as transformative medicines for patients with small cell lung cancer. We still have a long way to go to get all of those new medicines into our routine clinical care, into our routine care box for patients with small cell lung cancer, but it is a very exciting time for small cell lung cancer. New treatments are coming. We need to be able to get them to patients. Echo the message of please talk to your provider team about Can you think about a clinical trial? Are there clinical trials around you? And really, really, really want to echo this message of I love the fact that we had integrative medicine and a dietitian on this call. We treat people, not cancers or diseases. And part of that is making sure that your health is optimized from head to toe in terms of not just giving me chemotherapy and immunotherapy and all the fancy medicines that we give, but also making sure that diet and exercise and mental health and you find joy in every day as you're going through this journey with a care team around you.
Oh, that's lovely. Thank you so much, Dr. Lovely. That's really amazing what you said. Thank you. And Dr. Rosenzweig?
Yes, thank you very much. And I'd like to echo the prior remarks. And, you know, and also, no matter what the situation, you know, there's typically going to be options available, and it's important to explore all of them. And, you know, even if occasionally there's bad news, there's typically another treatment that can be used that can hopefully give some hope and some comfort to the disease. And it's always important to utilize every member of your care team. You know, obviously, the medical oncologists who spoke earlier are going to be, you know, the mainstays of treatment, but radiation, surgery, and the other parts of the care team are definitely going to have a role as well. So definitely use them when you can. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you. And Ms. Steele, do you want to add anything in terms of your takeaway for anybody?
Thank you, Dr. Messner. Yes, I think that my takeaway today is that this is a very exciting time in a disease that has had a very nihilistic viewpoint for a long, long time. So everything that we heard today is so encouraging and gives so much hope. And also to just let you know that you are not alone in this fight. You have a community that will embrace you. You have heard from great experts today who are working extremely hard to further treatments in small cell lung cancer. And if you need any support or help at Longevity, we are here for you. So please do reach out. You are not alone. Thank you.
Thank you so much. I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been phenomenal. And I also want to thank our participants as well for also so many people being on this call today. And although we couldn't take all of your questions, I want to comment on that as well. So before we end the call, I just want to comment on that. KidsCare does offer a whole range of services that you'll be able to access. And of course, Longevity Foundation is, of course, your go-to organization. But the other thing I want to stress is that for many of you, what we've been hearing is that you reach your doctor during work daytime hours, but evenings, weekends, and holidays tend to be challenging. So please do be sure to ask your doctor who's available weekends, evenings, and holidays. Also, for those of you who had a chance to ask a question, that's terrific. But still, take your question back to your treating healthcare team. They know you the best, and they know everything about you. And then also, for those of you who didn't get to ask a question, take your question to your treating healthcare team. Again, they know you the best, and again, you've learned a lot on today's program, so that you probably will ask the question a little bit differently and have learned something a lot along the way. Again, I want to thank you all for participating today, and I want to reiterate what Ms. Ann Fitch-Stiegel said, is that you are not alone. You are now part of the community of support, and we are here to help you. Thank you all, and have a great day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.